Hey everybody, it's Jason. This week is an episode I recorded with Jim Bruce, who's a stand-up, very funny guy, very nice guy. He has a Kickstarter that is out. It's got 18 days to go as of today. I wanted to make sure I got that out before it was over. He's trying to raise $5,000 to do his DVD comedy special called Jim Bruce, I'm Dying as Fast as I Can. The whole point of it is it's going to be his own eulogy. And I love it. It's a great theme. And he wanted to talk about Steve Martin's Comedy Is Not Pretty. So, yeah, take a listen. It was a lot of fun. And definitely check out his Kickstarter and donate whatever you can. Thanks so much.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Apologize for the quality. I did not bring my mixing equipment with me this week, so we're going to go back to the early episodes of the show. With me this week, I have Jim Bruce. Thank you so much.
We're going classic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Now, funnily enough, we'll be talking about Steve Martin, right?
Yes. Right.
And on one of his albums, the recording, the sound quality is bad, and he talked about how it was bad.
That's right, yeah.
And he said that it was one of his favorite things about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you're at home, you'd hear the clinking glasses, and you wouldn't be able to see certain things or hear certain things.
Yeah.
And as an audience member, you would make up things for yourself.
Right.
That seems like such a 70s thing to think.
Sure.
Like, I don't know that that's true now about people.
Unfortunately, no.
But it's probably appropriate for today.
Yeah, it is. So you wanted to do, before we get into the album, let's talk about your Kickstarter so that we don't forget.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I've been doing comedy forever.
Mm-hmm.
I started in high school. I actually started doing stand-up comedy in high school at a time when I wasn't allowed in the club. I would enter through the alley because I was underage. I couldn't drink. So I would go on stage, do my little act, and then leave.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a good habit to be in anyway.
Sure.
So I've been doing comedy forever and to varying degrees of success, good years, bad years, and whatever. And then a couple years ago, I started to do really super personal comedy that I don't think I'd ever done before.
Yeah.
Talking about my family and talking about my brother's suicide.
Oh, wow.
And talking about my mother's cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Really funny stuff, but very dark stuff.
Right,
very dark stuff.
Right.
And then my own thoughts on mortality. So I had this idea that it would be great to do my own eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
I get this idea that it would be fun to do a comedy show that was ostensibly, the idea was if you could deliver your own eulogy.
Yeah.
Because I've been to a number of funerals, and it almost always seems like the guy who's delivering the eulogy just was looking at note cards just ahead of time to make sure he got the name right.
Yep.
You know, he's like, boy, he sure was an outdoorsman. He sure loved to go. And then you think, my dad had one leg. What the hell is he talking about? And like, that's a real example, by the way. Because my dad had one leg.
Uh-huh.
And as I like to say is, just to give you an example of how many legs my dad had, I literally have twice as many. That's what I like to say in my act. But, like, clearly the guy didn't know who the hell my dad was, other than he knew, well, he's pretty sure he's dead.
Yeah.
That was about all the guy knew, and I always found that kind of funny, and I thought, well, if you could deliver your own eulogy.
Yeah.
And from that, I called, you know, material, and it's not a one-man show. I want to stress that, because those can be horrific.
Sure.
It's just stand-up, but with the window dressing that it's my funeral, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I want to do it right, so I'm doing a Kickstarter project where I want to do it true comedy special style. Three cameras, the right lighting, set, everything done correct so that I can offer the best version of this material, which is material I've been developing over 2.5 years, probably, and do a true special where it's over an hour and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So the name of the special is Jim Bruce, I'm Dying as Fast as I Can.
That's awesome.
You can find it on Kickstarter.com. I've actually gotten a lot of early support, which is nice, but I have a long way to go. So if you like good comedy, there's some good, like, bonus things that you get depending upon what tier you donate at.
Mm-hmm.
The $10 tier is surprisingly popular because all that is one original poem.
Awesome.
But I'm actually a decent poet. It sounds like a joke, but it's not.
Cool.
I'm actually a pretty good poet, and I will compose an original poem. Then there's obviously a copy of the DVD. The $50 one, I think, is probably my favorite because you get the DVD plus my worst headshot. from when I thought I was leading man material. Which, awesome. If you see my face right now, right? Mm-hmm. There's no way I have a justification to think I'm
and
a leading
I can relate.
Anything, right?
I can relate.
I know.
Yeah.
We have more or less the same face, mm-hmm. yeah, which is just pleasant enough.
Sure.
Yep.
White. Mm-hmm. Probably too red in the sun kind of face. Mm-hmm. And at some point I thought, ah, yeah, for sure. That's a thing leading ladies want to kiss. But that's what you think when you move from Chicago. Because in Chicago, mm-hmm. I'm pretty good looking.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I mean, I lived there for 2 years. So yeah. I know that's
if you don't have a mustache, you're pretty good looking.
Yeah, right, right. So you wanted, I'm glad that you're the first person who didn't pick, and I'm fine with it because I love Let's Get Small, but you're the first person to pick a non-Let's Get Small Steve Martin album.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this earlier on the phone briefly that a lot of people shit on this album.
They do.
You know, because it's Latter Day. It's definitely like, and we'll talk about your theory on why it is. And he talks about it in the book, too, Born Standing
Absolutely.
Up, right?
Great book, by the way. If you do stand up or mm-hmm. if you just find comedy fascinating, it is the single best book ever written about stand up.
Yeah, and I have it, and I have yet to read it. I need
it. And I have to say, if you think, like, there's books out that are like how to do stand-up yeah. and they're all nonsense.
Right.
They're nonsense.
Yeah.
They're just the worst thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this book, which is not about how to do stand-up, it's about his experience. Actually, I've learned things that I've applied to stand-up.
Sure.
Because somebody not being a huckster tends to be pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
All the books, by the way, if you ever comedy classes, mm-hmm. it's a level of hucksterism.
For sure.
That is so foul.
Yeah, yeah.
And incidentally, I am teaching a course in how to do open mics.
Mm-hmm.
And I just teach how to do open mics.
Okay.
Like, I teach you about writing your name on a piece of paper.
Okay, that's good.
We cover
yeah.
that. I teach you about where's the best part to stand in the back so that you can leave right away when you're done. Really critical things. It's
sure.
$700.
Oh, not bad. So, not yeah. bad. Is there a payment plan or anything?
Yeah, yeah. You give me $700. It's a pretty good payment
that's
plan.
That's good. No, that's good for you, for sure. So you want to do Comedy Is Not Pretty, which, I mean, my first impressions, because I own it, and I had not listened to it yet, because nobody said I want to, I don't get to listen to the albums until somebody says I want to
right.
talk about it, sometimes, unless it's like a classic. I did air quotes for everybody at home. This one has, like, I think the one thing, there are a couple things that struck me. One, he does feel like, he's not phoning it in, but he definitely feels like he's having a little more fun with the idea that he's up on stage and that he knows he's famous, he knows he's rich, he gets to fuck around with that a lot.
And I like that,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, the other thing is, like, it did feel very coarsely edited, and I'm wondering, I don't know if he talks about that in the book, too, but, like, it does feel like, kind of like, oh, just, like, kind of, like, hammer, here's your joke, but, like, it's, like, very coarse for the, even for the time, like.
Yeah, absolutely, it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
It's bits and pieces is and I think he does kind of allude to it. I don't think he outright says this, but it feels to me like, you know, the first album is, it not exactly, doesn't exactly have an arc, but it kind of does. There's
sure.
kind of a feeling like we're doing a show. We're not just doing stand-up.
Right.
This is a stand-up show. And there's a difference. Like,
mm-hmm.
when I do a set at, say, just some random 20-minute set at a club where I'm getting 20 minutes, I might do 20 minutes that make sense together, but I might also just be a little freewheeling because
sure.
nothing's on the line for it. There's nothing's on the hook, so it might just be things I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's cool, and it's usually probably 20 really good minutes. And then you do an hour, and now if you're a new comedian, you probably just have an hour.
Yeah.
If you have an hour.
Right.
And there's probably definitely, you're like, oh, I better fuck around for 7 minutes because I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about a guy in his third album. It's bits and pieces that probably he didn't do on earlier albums because he wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Some of it's probably newer stuff that's just newer and not particularly polished.
Right.
And there is a feeling of, like, fulfilling a contract.
Sure.
There's that feeling. But I don't really mind. I kind of think that's okay. Because
mm-hmm.
some of the jokes I absolutely love.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And he makes a choice on this album that I think illustrates how he needed to fill time, which is he reads a passage from a book he wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's one of my favorite things.
It's great, yeah.
He reads a passage from Cruel Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he reads the signature piece, The Cruel Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that a hilarious bit?
It's so good.
And And that, of course, is really polished. But it's really polished because he's reading.
Sure.
But really putting a great performance in it, doing a little banjo in the background.
Yeah, it's great.
I like that a lot. What was your favorite thing on the album?
That's hard, because I only got to listen to it... That's so unprofessional. This never happens. Well, when I say never, here, I'm sorry. So, hey, sweetie, I'm in the middle of the podcast. Huh? No, we're here. We're doing it at his place. You didn't get my message, did you? It's okay. I'm in Culver City, so I'm going to leave this when we're done, and then I'll be home. That's logic, I guess. I love you. Bye. Well, that was fun for everybody at home to listen to, and I'm sure fun for you.
That was great.
Here we go. Ringer goes off. So my favorite part, because like I said, I only got to listen to it briefly. Cruel Shoes probably stood out because, I mean, I have the book, but I haven't read all of them, but that, you know, recognize that, so that's a great bit.
Now, by the way, he did this before the book came out, so this would be the first time people had actually read it or had heard it.
Sure.
You know.
Comedy jokes here tonight. And what we do is when we get this tape, we're going to take it to Warner Brothers, and we're going to erase it. I'd like to open up with kind of a traditional comedy bit. I'm going back to the old traditional comedy bits. I know I used to do the far out, but now I'm back to the traditional because I have the both now. The traditional on one hand, the far out on the other. So now the whole, the unified. Because this appeals to everyone this way. This way you don't eliminate. And I think if you appeal to everyone, it's more money. And this is why. So I'm going to do a traditional comedy bit, the old sound effects routine. This is where I tell a little story and sort of make it come to life through the use of sound effects. Now, this is done totally with my own voice. There's no gimmicks or anything like that. So here we go. If you close your eyes, I think you're going to be able to imagine that you're in a sleazy nightclub in San Francisco. So. Well, I woke up this morning and had a bowl of cornflakes. Then I went down and started up the car. But fortunately, the atom bomb went off. I can make any sound.
It's so hard because I love when he busts into the banjo out of nowhere. Yeah. I really do love that. To me, like, even though it's a standalone piece, I love when he's just so... I mean... He's the opposite of self-deprecating, but he's being self-deprecating by being such a sly, like, he's got this smarmy bastard of a character.
Yeah.
It's so hard for me. I don't know what my favorite part would be.
You know what stood out to me that I didn't think of as a kid? Mm-hmm. Two things. One is, I'll tell you what a comedy nerd I am and what an idiot I am sometimes. When I first heard the album, there's a section where he plays the banjo. Mm-hmm. And it's the drop thumb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He does a banjo solo. And it's just banjo. There's no jokes. He's just playing the banjo.
Yeah.
And he had never done that before. And as a kid, that confused me so much that I thought to myself, because I'm such a big Steve Martin fan, and even more so then, I mm-hmm. still love him, and his book is amazing. But like now, of course, I have the... You know, I have a lot of years on me to where I'm not as big a hero worship guy anymore,
sure.
necessarily. And I just sort of appreciate people as performers. But then it was like, he was my hero. Mm-hmm. So I was listening to this jokeless banjo thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I made up that he was doing the most incredible meta joke
mm-hmm.
by not doing any jokes at all.
Right, right, right.
And because he does do that kind of
sure.
thing, like
sure, sure,
at
sure.
least it sort of makes sense that I thought this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's building up an expectation
mm-hmm.
and then he's never delivering on it, which is a classic comedy trope.
Yes.
But that's not what he's doing. He's just playing the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, and when I would talk about it with my friends and go, the banjo thing is so hilarious, because, and it's not like it made me laugh, I just wanted to feel smart.
Sure.
I was like, look at this great joke I got about the guy playing banjo. And then the other thing that occurred to me, and it's similar to Monty Python. Monty Python, Eric Idle and some of the other gents talked about the meaning of life
mm-hmm.
and how it would have been a better movie. I happen to love the movie.
Yeah.
But they, one of the comments they made years later was, you know, it would have been a better movie if we would have just taken a moment to step back and look at all the material we had and just tied it together a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of random skits throughout life, if maybe we had followed one guy from birth to death and did the same sketches, but this recurring character in the same way that we follow Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never thought of this before, but when Steve tells us his real name, we learn his real name in this. Have you ever heard that bit before?
No.
His real name is Gurn. It's a funny bit. Good.
It's hilarious.
But it occurred to me that had he just thought about it for a second, he would have done that early.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that he normally goes, I know what you're thinking, Steve, how can you be so fucking funny?
Mm-hmm.
If at the rest of the special he would have went, I know what you're thinking, Gerd, how can you be so... That would have been a funny threat.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, showcases how he was not entirely in it.
Right.
He was tired. He's been on the road forever at this point.
Yeah.
And we don't know it, but this is, after this album, he's like, you know what? I think I might take a break from stand-up. And that's how he thought of it at the time, I guess, was I'm going to take a break from stand-up.
Yeah.
Little did he know that the break was forever.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It was... And sad at the time. It made me sad at the time. Sure. And yet I look back at it and I go, well, it was the best decision he could have ever made.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
He's got a phenomenal movie career.
Mm-hmm.
And you never think to yourself, man, Steve Martin used to be funny.
Right, right.
Remember that... Remember how he got shitty?
Right, right, right. Yeah.
You know, you never think that about him, which you did, like, a classic. Bob Hope was a national treasure.
Sure.
But his last years of life weren't years being funny.
For sure.
They were being weird golf jokes recycled through a prism that no longer actually reflected anything in life.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's bizarre.
I think, you know, it's good you point that out, because we've talked a few times about Eddie Murphy and about, you know, how we wish we'd have him in the room so we'd be like, why the hell aren't you doing comedy anymore? But it could be very much the same thing.
I think
so. You know, like, he went out at the top. Very much so.
I do wonder if he even had anything left to say.
Sure.
Because I think about his second big special, Delirious, and how that's an okay special, but if you think that comedy's not pretty, is disjointed, then...
That's true.
That's all that Delirious is. It's more high octane because his nature as a performer, but it's still just like... I mean, I remember there's a bit in there where a audience member calls out a potential callback. Half. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
And an audience member calls out the callback, and he laughs, and I'm like, well, then you didn't think about this very much, because that's the perfect thing to say right then, and the audience guy says it.
Yeah.
This is probably the time when writing is over, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Man, that's awesome. We need to talk about that album sometime, actually. Because that's a really good example. I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah, it's funny to me, because I think... I thought the same thing about Eddie Murphy at the time, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But a much, much more did I think that about Steve Martin, because I was so young when he was a comic, and I was so influenced by him. It's funny, because he influenced me to want to be a stand-up comic, and as a stand-up comic, I'm nothing like him.
Right.
And probably the comedian I have the most in common with is probably Richard Pryor, who as a kid scared me, because I was little, I was living in Tucson, Arizona, in a very cloistered... just very, like, you know, segregated. And then Chicago, it's not like it's any better.
Sure.
It wasn't until I became older and I really started to understand what he was doing. And I went, oh, crap, I think that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's funny to me, in a way. But Steve Martin also, I was so stupid as a kid. Because, like, I don't think I completely understood he was doing a character.
Right.
Because he's doing a bizarre character when you think about it. Because the name of his character is Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And he behaves more or less like the real Steve Martin, with certain idiotic components that aren't Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny when you think about
it.
Because Rodney Dangerfield, you know that's a character. There's nothing about that that feels real.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about Steve Martin that I was just thoroughly fooled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet it's all stories. Invented stories. I can't think of one story you listen to Steve Martin and go, oh... There's a little glimmer of the real Steve Martin.
Right. Yeah, that is true. He's been notoriously elusive and, I guess,
very much reflects, you know, he's a clown. He was a magician for a long time, you know. It still is, I assume. Well, maybe not, though. I feel like he goes through phases. He's like, this is my thing and I'm done.
Have you ever heard about how he handles fans? His story, the business card? No, the balls. Have you heard that one? He's got a funny story. He goes, you know, every now and then, because I'm famous, people will come up to me and they'll want to ask for my autograph while I'm having lunch. And I'm always very polite. What I always do is grab them firmly by the balls and tug up. I don't pull back because that seems excessive.
I've never heard that. That's hilarious.
It's just his way of saying, leave me alone. Let me do my comedy.
So what's the first album you listened to as a kid, first comedy album?
My first comedy album, I actually think that it was Button Down Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's a great album.
Of course. How young were you when you were listening to comedy first?
Oh, my goodness. Five?
Yeah.
Five, yeah. Really little, because my brother was really into comedy, and he had comedy, and especially then, because you were actually buying comedy albums. You weren't buying them on CD and remembering comedy albums. They were a thing, and they charted back then.
Yeah,
they charted, and they sometimes do now, but but when they do now, it's news. Mm-hmm. It's like a big deal that they did.
Yeah.
Back then, they always charted because people just... I think they will again, though, because there seems to be a really interesting resurgence of stand-up.
For sure.
In the most positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of modern comics, I don't know if you've noticed this, this is interesting to me, a lot of younger comedians from this generation aren't dickheads. They're actually nice people who will shake your hand and who are humble and aren't necessarily raging alcoholics. I mean, they probably are, but they're at least not completely raging alcoholics. It seems it's a definitely a different vibe in comedy in general. Well, you meet people and they're just really, really sweet. And in the old days, you would automatically go, oh, they're really nice. Yeah, they're probably pretty shitty. And whereas now, they might actually just be brilliant comedians.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that you could actually be a functioning human being and do stand-up.
Right.
Or at least pretend to be.
At least pretend, right.
A lot of you people are saying, hey, is Steve Martin your real name? And finally, it's time I could admit it. It's not my real name. When I first started in show business, my manager suggested that I change my name because I thought the other name was funny sounding. And so I changed it to Steve Martin. And now I think enough time has gone by and the audience has gotten a little more sophisticated. And I'm going to go back and start using my real name. And I don't think people will laugh when they hear my real name is Gern Blanston. I'll be doing a show this fall on TV, the Gern Blanston Show. A couple albums coming out. The first one will be just Gern. Second one, Simply Gern. Do a couple of movies, Gern Goes to College. And doing some cassette tapes, Learn with Gern, language things. So now I only answer to the name Gern Blanston. This is the new thing for Gern.
Do you know then what the... Oh, you just said what the first one was, but were you listening to them around... Did you sit and listen to them on your own or with your family?
I listened to them on my own, yeah. And I acquired the Steve Martin albums. Actually, I owned them long after they were popular.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was still probably too young to have bought albums on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So any of the comedy albums I heard were owned by my brother or by my other brother or maybe even my sisters because they were just around.
Mm-hmm.
But the Steve Martin albums were ones that I sought out. And I more or less caught up to Steve Martin close to the end of his career as a stand-up. Because, of course, I was a kid. I wasn't going to be going to clubs. That wasn't going to happen. I didn't live anywhere near him, and I was a kid. So probably the album that I actually... And I guess it makes sense that I picked this album, because the album that I bought that was closest to when it actually came out would have been Comedy's Not Pretty.
Okay.
That was... And then I backtracked from there. So I actually heard his first album later anyway, just because that's just how it happened.
Right.
And I remember thinking You Can Be a Millionaire was one of the funniest things.
Yeah.
I still think that that's really funny.
Yeah.
And I like, it's got everything in that joke. Look at it structurally. You Can Be a Millionaire has everything in it as far as you know, it's got a really cool twist where, you know, to like, the first thing is get $1 million. And then it's just this completely dismissive thing of like, no concern about how one would get $1 million. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love that, and then I forgot. Mm-hmm. And that whole bit is hilarious. And then he does the thing about hostages, I think, is pretty great.
Yeah.
And there's so many little bits on that, but it's all bits, and none of it really does connect together. But it's not like, what album is Cat Toys on? Is that on the first album? Is that on his second album?
Oh, that's a good question. It might be the second one, actually.
See, I remember, like, some Steve Martin.
Right.
But it's like Cat Toys. If you look at the bit for, you've heard Cat Toys, right?
Yeah.
If you look at Cat Toys, it's a whole bit.
Right.
And it's a story, and there's a lot of structure to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow it all the way to the end. Whereas this one, the closest to that is him talking about buying a stereo.
Right, right.
And even that, he screws up at the beginning, and they just leave it in.
Right.
Even that, he can't quite get his motor started for that one. But once he does, it's a brilliant joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once he does, and then... And such a dated joke, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, I wonder how many people are listening to this to going, I don't understand what
right. The
technology is he's referring to.
And nobody would have ever assumed that that would be a thing that would necessarily go out, either. It's so funny. Just within the last few years, is that obsolete as a concept. Did you make friends over comedy as a kid? Did you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Steve Martin in particular. None of my friends were, a few of my friends were into Richard Pryor, mm-hmm. but I don't think they were into him for any other reason than that he said bad words.
Yeah.
The way that sort of little boys will be.
Of course, of course.
But Steve Martin for sure, and like The Jerk, I remember going to The Jerk with friends, mm-hmm. thinking it was a brilliant movie.
Of course.
And all of us being pissed off when we saw reviews or heard adults talk about it, because we knew they were wrong.
Yeah.
And we were right. They were wrong.
Right.
That movie ages beautifully. If mm-hmm. you've seen it recently, that's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's weird to me that it got such vitriolic reviews. But I've talked about this with friends of mine every now and then. We'll talk about how people at some point, somebody becomes a certain amount of successful, and there just seems to be a collective decision
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I think it's time for them to have a failure.
Right.
So
right.
whether or not that's justified, like Bruce Willis, his was Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
And
you
know what? Watch that movie again.
Yeah.
It's not a train wreck.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect movie. It's certainly not as good as The Jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the, like, insult to humanity that people act like. It's a perfectly enjoyable film.
Yeah.
The other one would be The Cable Guy.
Yeah.
That's a great movie. Yeah, that's not even...
It's shit on for no apparent reason.
Not even like, it's actually pretty good. No, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hilarious, dark, and it's a nice turn for him.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's the best version of it turned, because he's made a lot of dumb turns.
Oh, yeah.
But him going dark comedy was a good turn, because mm-hmm. he's still doing comedy.
For sure.
But yes, The Jerk. I remember seeing The Man with Two Brains.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we would go, me and my friends would go see every Steve Martin movie.
Sure.
And especially that era when he was being really experimental.
Mm-hmm.
Man with Two Brains, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, Pennies from Heaven. Those four movies to me, Following the Jerk, are all movies that are practically art films.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Pennies from Heaven. That's a crazy movie.
Yeah.
You've seen that, right?
Yeah, once, but...
It's... I don't even know if it's great. Mm-hmm. It might not be great, but man, is it interesting.
For sure, for sure.
And then after that, The Lonely Guy is a good movie, and then mm-hmm. right about then is you start to get into movies that are, for the most part, very good, and I like most of them. Some mm-hmm. of them I don't, because they're not for me.
Right.
Nobody made, you know, the family movies for me. That's not... But... That doesn't mean they aren't good. They're just not for me.
Yeah.
But, like, right around then, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, great movie. But now he's an actor. Now he's a comic actor, the same as Alec Baldwin or anybody. But those early movies are the transition out of this album, but he's still experimental Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a good era.
For sure.
Yeah.
He's one of those people, I guess, that I fall victim to the trying to get a grasp on him when there's really no point. Because he just seems to have this just this necessity that I can completely understand of wanting to evolve as an artist and just do a different thing when he feels like doing a different thing. Of course, he's going to collect paychecks along the way.
Yeah.
You know, but he really does seem to want to evolve.
Yeah.
You know, and just keep doing what he wants to do, I guess. But people are still, like myself, probably still a little stuck in the mode of wild and crazy guy and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part of your brain that wants that to be true.
Yeah, I would love him to do a stand-up special.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it, but it's so not going to happen.
Right.
And for so many reasons, because I also think imagining myself as Steve Martin and what that would be like. You're a guy who hasn't done stand-up for a very long time.
Yeah.
There is no financial impetus to do stand-up at this point. So it would have to be 100% a creative one.
Yeah.
And I could see him having that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could imagine that.
Right.
That piece of the puzzle, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do stand-up. But what I can't imagine is him saying, and it'll be worth putting my legacy on the line for this.
Right.
Because right. Now he's a damn legend of stand-up.
Of course.
And it doesn't matter if you hated the Clouseau movies, which some people do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because you'll always say, but his stand-up. And his stand-up is this jewel that's untouchable.
Yeah.
And you do one more thing, and then maybe it starts to lose its luster, and then mm-hmm. you get people culturally reevaluating the stuff he did then, which isn't fair, but that's what people do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just never going to happen as much as... And for years, as a kid, I was like, well, you know, eventually he's going to want to do...
Right.
Because I couldn't imagine not wanting to do stand-up. And I really can't, but for me, it's different. And not even take the fame out of it. Hopefully, I become super famous doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. But even then, I'm just never going to not want to do stand-up.
Sure.
I see myself as far as passion,
mm-hmm.
I see myself Carlin-esque in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not comparing myself to his talent or anything or right. any assessment like that. That's for other people to decide. But as far as, like, I would love to be 80 years old and still doing relevant stand-up.
Right.
Which
right.
Carlin managed to do, which is weird.
I know. I know.
No other comic's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Every other comic has become either more or less retired,
mm-hmm.
where they trot them out every now and then and they'll say a few funny things in front of a microphone, or not retired and a sad shadow of who they were.
Yeah.
Because stand-up has passed them by so thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, everybody was really excited about Joan Rivers' recent thing.
Yeah.
And it's fine. I'm not saying she's not funny. But mm-hmm. I am saying that if you actually watch her objectively, stand-up has just passed her by.
Mm-hmm.
The way she's doing her jokes is the way that people used to do jokes.
Yep. Yep.
And stand-up is just like, it's just like music. It's just like art. There comes a time when, well, we're doing it this way. What mm-hmm. you're doing is okay.
Sure.
And there are jokes there. We can all understand that they're jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But... like, you listen to an old Woody Allen album.
Oh, sure.
And it's catskilly, silly, mm-hmm. you know, silly, nebbish, Jewish jokes that are great.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody were doing them now, you wouldn't think they were great.
Right.
You can only appreciate them in a cultural context.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I think, I was trying to think about that, this album. Would I find this stuff funny if somebody was doing this today?
Right.
And the jokes didn't exist before today, and I'm hearing them for the first time. And I think I'd find the jokes funny,
because
mm-hmm. I think they're just funny. The Gurn thing, I think, is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dead Men, the Cruel Shoes thing, I think, even today, would be cutting edge.
Sure.
A guy doing that, banjo,
mm-hmm.
an excerpt from a book, that would still be cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things that I would probably just... passively think were funny,
mm-hmm.
but wouldn't probably impact me in any way.
Sure.
It's only with the weight of, you know, Steve Martin being Steve Martin that really sells it.
But I listened to it a couple of days and said, hey, this sounds like shit. So I went out and I got the dodecaphonic with the 12 speakers, and this was more to my liking for a while. But the ear gets sophisticated pretty fast, and I got rid of that. Got the millophonic, the 1,000 speakers, and I'm listening to it. I say, hey, this sounds like shit, too. The other one was shit one. This is shit two. So finally, I got the Googlephonic, the highest number of speakers before infinity. It sounds like shit. So I said, hey, maybe it's a needle. So I had the old typical diamond needle and searched around, finally got the moon rock needle, and cost me $3 million for that. So now I have a Google Phonics stereo with a moon knock rock. Beginning again. So now I have...
But it, I think that's true of his first album, too.
Definitely, definitely.
Because it just, that was the wind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like right now, Louis C.K. Louis C.K. is the current comedy can do no wrong god.
Mm-hmm.
Until he does something that people decide collectively is bad just because mm-hmm. they want to teach him a lesson.
Right, right.
So I really don't understand that.
I don't. It's just necessity that you're too successful. We don't want to feel want to feel insignificant. So,
but I know I'm in a minority. I'm even like flummoxed by the Dane Cook backlash.
Yeah,
like I'm not a fan per se,
mm-hmm.
but he's made me laugh.
Sure,
and that always I'm always like stunned. I'm like, why? Well, just don't listen to him. You don't have to be angry at him.
Right, right. I mean, even Louis C.K. kind of backed off. He didn't back off, but he, he was willing to examine his own perspective on Dane Cook.
Yeah.
Even after basically accusing him of stealing jokes, he still was willing on his show to give some perspective and show that maybe he was being a little overreacting.
Although I will say, Dane Cook is a genius at burning bridges. I'm amazed at his ability to make people angry because...
Oh, no.
It was amazing how fast it happened. It was... It almost seemed like you would have to do it on purpose because mm-hmm. he did the episode of Louie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, of course, a brilliant episode.
Yeah.
And that night when it aired and over the next couple days, Dane Cook's cachet with just the indie comedy crowd and just with comedy crowds in general and the public at large mm-hmm. was very positive.
Sure.
People were like, wow, Dane Cook, that's pretty good. He's willing to make fun of himself. He did the best acting I've ever seen him do mm-hmm. in that episode. And literally the next day was when he was at the Laugh Factory saying some of the most misogynistic things that went viral. And it went viral.
Yeah.
And he immediately, I was like, wow. You, perfect. Just like, you built the bridge and you were setting it on fire as you were completing construction. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that's a skill.
Yeah, it's a, man, that is Dane Cook, man.
Do you remember when you first realized you wanted to be a stand-up?
Not just
were interested in it, but really wanted to do it?
Watching Carson, and probably the first comedian where I thought I could probably do that was Letterman,
mm-hmm.
the stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
As a little kid, seeing Letterman do stand-up, I thought, because I really liked him,
mm-hmm.
and I still do. I like Letterman as a person,
mm-hmm.
though I don't know anything about him, but he's one of those celebrities you grow up with thinking, like, he seems like a guy you know, even
sure.
though he's not. He seems like Dave.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the first comedian who I thought, I'd like to do that. And definitely seeing my favorite stuff to see of Steve Martin's, and I didn't know why back then, would be on Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because tiny slices of comedians is really nice. It's really nice to get just a tiny slice of a comedian mm-hmm. within a larger context of musical guests and stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, I think I wanted to do stand-up probably as early as 5 years old.
That's awesome.
And I did a magic show when I was in grade school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all these little tricks that I had bought at a magic shop. So they were all very generic tricks. There was the hide the ball inside the three cups.
Sure.
There was the two girls, one cup. I did that trick. It's a great trick. A very popular trick growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Scarves, did scarves and all that stuff. But I wasn't good at any of them, and I was never good. If you see my hands, they're very gangly. They're meant for monkey work. They're not subtle hands. I was never going to be a magician. But I made up a bunch of jokes that went with them out of nervousness while I was doing the act at the talent show. And it, you know, in my memory, I killed. I don't know if I really did because it's my memory, but mm-hmm. I just remember hearing people laugh at the silly things that I did. And I kept, one of the things I kept claiming was that I had gotten all the tricks from an old shaman. It was a very silly joke, but I give myself credit. I was like five and I made this up as I said, I got this trick from an old shaman, if it doesn't go well, he's not getting any older. I was saying I was going to kill him. I was like, that's a pretty clever joke for a five-year-old
kid. Great. That's pretty great.
And I didn't hear that. I don't think I heard that anywhere. I think it was just an early moment where I thought, oh, I could make up jokes.
Yeah.
And I did the act, and I was very happy afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I thought, maybe I'd like to do stand-up. And then the next year, they had another talent show, so I said, well, I'm going to do that magic act again. Mm-hmm. And I had all new tricks and all new jokes, and I bombed.
Oh, no.
I had stone cold silence. And it's funny, by the way, to bomb when you're six or seven, because that means the adults in the audience didn't even want to placate me. Didn't even want to say, well, he's a little kid. Shouldn't we politely laugh? No. And that made me want to do stand-up even more. Mm-hmm. That made me want to do it even more because I was like, I could remember the feeling of getting laughs.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the getting laughs made me kind of want to do stand-up.
Yeah.
The failing to get it made me want to do it even more.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm my most comfortable on stage. I always have pretty good sets. I'll kill sometimes. But in the back of my mind, I go, I know that if you just aren't on your game, mm-hmm. if you're not in tune with what the audience wants, you can have a bad set.
Sure.
So stay on your game. And that, like, sort of fire of fear where you're like, I know what it feels like to suck, mm-hmm. is really, I think, drives you forward into, like, being better than you ever were.
For sure.
Funnily enough, because of doing this, thinking about doing this podcast, I hadn't thought about how much I like Steve Martin in a long time, because he's just a guy in the background,
sure.
you know, like the Pope. He's just a guy, you know, yeah, he's a good guy. He's always there, kind of in the background of mm-hmm. your life. And I do a lot of autobiographical comedy. I'll make up stuff, too, but a lot of my comedy is just pain, mm-hmm. you know, twisted in a funny way,
sure.
event things that people can relate to. But I actually wrote a bit that's 100% Steve Martin style bit. Performed in my style, because I'm not going to go, hey, Jim Bruce, so I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But it's I guess other comedians have done it, but I think he's my inspiration. So it's just an absurd bit mm-hmm. that I've been doing. And it felt really good to do. And it went really well. And I was like, oh, that felt kind of good just to do that every once in a while. Just mm-hmm. do this absurd bit.
Yeah.
And the premise is just really simple. The premise was that I'd like to do an impression for you now, but legally I'm not allowed to, so I'm just going to do a joke. So then I do a joke, and then I go, I don't even want to get into it, but as I go along, I explain the court case for why I can't do the impression. And it builds and builds and builds, and it's a funny little bit.
I like it.
It's very Steve Martin-esque.
Yeah, definitely. Building on a false premise to an extreme point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know why these big celebrities get away with stuff like that? I'll tell you why. Because the public has a short memory. And I'm sorry, I hope I haven't offended you, but that's the way it is. No, I mean, let me give you a little test. How many people remember a couple of years ago when the Earth blew up? How many people? See? So few people remember. And you would think something like that people would remember, but no. Come on, you don't remember when the Earth blew up? It was completely destroyed? And we escaped to this planet on the giant space ark? Where have you people been? And the government decided not to tell the stupider people because they thought that it might affect... Ah. Okay. How we doing on time, huh?
Do you, you talked about this a little bit earlier, do you miss having like a physical, I apologize for not having it with me, but do you miss having a physical album to hold on to and to like physically put the needle on the groove? Does that?
No.
No?
No. No, I'm not that guy for sure. Because my ear's not very sensitive anyway. Mm-hmm. Like when people will say that, they'll go, well, there's nothing like hearing something on the record. And mm-hmm. I go, well, if you're missing 20% of your hearing in one of your ears, it's the same.
Sure.
Because
I am.
I like having the albums as a thing to look at, though.
Right, yeah.
I do like that.
Okay.
I like owning the album. Like you'll see, well, it's not up right now, but I have albums, like I have some Beatles albums that mm-hmm. I love owning, mm-hmm. but I listen to them digitally.
Sure, yeah, no.
And I have comedy albums that I have. I have a copy of The Button Down Mind mm-hmm. because it was the first comedy album I had ever heard, and also I just love Bob Newhart. I could have easily picked that album,
of course. Yeah.
So I have copies of comedy albums, but when I listen, it's so much more convenient to just be digital.
Yes. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
That I don't necessarily miss the hiss, although you sent me a copy of it mm-hmm. Off of album recording, so I listened to it again, and it was kind of nice actually.
Yeah.
Hearing it that way, because I could hear the. I guess I would miss it if I thought about it.
Sure, sure, sure.
But I just sort of think about it in terms of things that are easier for me.
Of course.
I think in terms of all things easier for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where I thought we've talked about it earlier, and I understand people wanting to get music on vinyl if that's your big thing, but I just like comedy on vinyl for exactly what you're talking about, for having the jacket. For instance, this one's one thing I forgot to bring up. I opened the copy that I bought of last night of Comedy Is Not Pretty, and I hadn't opened it before, and there's a poster of him in it in a pink suit. It's about 11 by 17 or something, which I absolutely have to get framed.
Is it with
now.
A fish?
No, he's just standing there in a pink
okay.
suit looking disappointed.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so that's the kind of thing that you miss. You don't really get that.
That's right.
You know? Yeah.
Because one of them, I think he did that in all his albums, because mm-hmm. one of them is he's in a suit with a fish.
Oh, okay.
That's funny. Yeah. So now that is what the album was great for.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what you're in it for, it's a crapshoot. You might
for
not
sure.
have gotten that poster.
Mm-hmm.
You might not have even gotten the inside sleeve. You might have just got the record and hoped right. that it would play.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's right. You would get a lot of cool things with albums.
Mm-hmm.
And that I do miss, for sure. Like, lyrics and stuff and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And the inside, I always think that some of the liner notes are hilarious.
Yeah.
Because I think some of the liner notes are really misguided on early albums. And
mm-hmm.
in the Steve Martin album, if you read the liner notes
mm-hmm.
on that, and you read the, and the Button Down Mind, there's liner notes that talk about, or it might be his second album, The Return of the Button Down Mind, but there's liner notes that talk about how great he is
mm-hmm.
and how wonderful he is and how people are reacting to him. And that happens in some of the early Beatles albums.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, well, you know, I already bought the album.
Right.
Who are you? Who are you pitching this to?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on the fence.
Right.
I'm at home right now. I've made the purchase. You don't need to sell me anymore.
Yeah.
That seems so misguided.
Yeah, and I have so many early comedy albums that are exactly that. They're like, yeah. You know him from this. I know him from this. Just give me
right.
the damn album.
It's in my hand. And you couldn't have read it. That's the other part.
Right.
You couldn't have read it without buying it because you had to open it up.
Yeah.
So who the fuck is that for? Who are you writing to?
If you were going to recommend this album to somebody who hasn't heard it before, and again, if they have reservations about it, like some people seem to have, what would you be the first thing you would say? What would be the first thing to convince them to listen to it?
Okay, if I were going to tell you about this album, this is what I'm going to say. Listen to this album, because in this album, this is exactly what Steve Martin, one of your heroes, truly wanted to do at this minute. And you can hear things that I think actually are the closest. We talked about a guy you couldn't get to know.
Mm-hmm.
I think this album might actually be the closest to being reflective of what actually makes Steve Martin tick.
Mm-hmm.
From Cruel Shoes, I'm a guy, just buy it for that. Cruel mm-hmm. Shoes alone, and especially now when you're going to pay 50 cents at a record store or whatever.
Right.
But Cruel Shoes alone is Steve Martin about to become the Steve Martin we know now.
Yeah.
And alone, you're seeing Steve Martin transition. The other albums, great albums comedically, but they're all great comedically. You're going to hear great jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also going to be seeing Steve Martin transition to becoming who he is now. Elder statesman, banjo aficionado,
mm-hmm.
guy who's put money into giving banjo scholarships.
That's awesome.
Isn't that wild that he does that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild, and I'd say even crazy.
Let's reiterate. Let's plug everything. Let's reiterate the Kickstarter and everything again so that we don't forget it.
Oh, yeah. I would love some support in Jim Bruce. I'm Dying as Fast as I Can, my Kickstarter project. It is ostensibly me delivering my own eulogy. A lot of funny jokes. You'll hear some hilarious jokes about my brother's suicide, my mom's cancer, and poorly planned one-night stands with women who were very kind to me, who just really none of us have regrets necessarily. And lovely jokes, you know, just I think, boy, one of my favorite things is I did a stand-up set at the Improv, and it was a great set, and it was one of my darker sets. Uh-huh. And by the way, the special won't be entirely dark, because okay. I just don't think it should be, but I had done a very dark set at the Improv. It was, and I was in a sense, it was risky, because it was one of my showcases there, mm-hmm. but I wanted them to see me.
Sure.
And I figured, well, I could undo the damage later if they don't like me, but they should see me. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, this woman came up to me, and she said, "That was so funny, but you seemed so sad." And I thought that was one of the nicest compliments. And then she said, "My aunt committed suicide." I goes, "It's brutal, isn't it?" Mm-hmm. And I ended up having like a 20 or 30 minute conversation with this woman.
Yeah.
And it was nice, because I was like, that's kind of what you can do with comedy.
Yeah.
And any art. Because in my comedy, you know, I'm always the victim. That's one thing I get from Steve Martin for mm-hmm. sure. I'm the victim. I don't take people down a peg or two, because I don't right. think that that's my job.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's even nice.
Right.
You know, I think that there's something pretty good about going and seeing a stand-up comedian. Like, I'm not the guy telling you Sandy Hook jokes.
Right.
I don't
right,
like that. Right. I'm not into that. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw a comedian last night who talked about Boston.
Uh-huh. Jesus Christ.
And really, what he had to say was valid.
Okay.
He wasn't a complete jerk. Mm. His point was valid. Mm-hmm. It even was comedically sound. Mm. Like, if you analyzed it like yeah. architecture,
yeah.
you're like, well, that's comedically sound, but like architecture, I don't want to go in that building.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he was wrong, because he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I think in maybe even subtler hands, like a Louis C.K., maybe it would have even been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I don't like that. For, yeah. And for my act, what I like is that at the end of it, you were distracted, mm-hmm. but then you thought, oh, there were some thoughtful pieces in there. Mm-hmm. On top of being a nice distraction and him doing some very silly things, there yeah. was also some thoughtfulness. And unlike Steve Martin, you'll know who I am. When you see my stand-up, you'll know who I am. I'm not hiding very well. If I'm hiding, it's not very well.
Where can we find you online?
You can find me at Comic Jim Bruce on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Facebook, either James Bruce, or you can even look up Jammy Bryce.
Uh-huh.
JimBruceComedy.com is my website. And I'll be in Bridgetown. Hey, if you're in Portland, mm-hmm. come see me. I'm doing three different shows there. I'm doing a show with Mike Schmidt. You know Mike Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Brilliant comedian. I'm doing a lot of cool shows there. I'm in the Bridgetown Comedy Festival this weekend. Come see me. If we meet me during the day, have lunch with me, it'll be great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks
man.
For having me on the show.
Of course. And I will make sure. I will. How much? When's the Kickstarter up?
It's sure. going right now.
Yeah. I'm sorry. When does it end? I want to make sure people get in now.
But. Oh, yeah. I do. Yeah. Now would be good. But it ends May 20th.
May 20th. Okay.
So we have a little bit of time.
I don't wait till the last minute. That's not what I'm saying. Don't. I just want to make sure people know in case they're not ready. They don't have it yet.
You got a little time. And please.
All right. Thank you again, Jim.
Oh,
I
awesome.
Really appreciate it. And as always, everybody, thanks for listening and have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, rate us highly, and write your reviews. You can follow us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl and Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl.